8:02 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Breath, Sportsnet 650. My voice is coming back. Slowly but surely. Halford, can't keep me down forever.
I was just going to say, it sounded like it was faltering a bit there.
But... No, I'm doing okay. I'm fine. What's your problem?
Halford and Breath in the morning.
Halford and Breath of the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, that's what you're waiting for. He is a present. Yeah, I missed that one up. We is a present.
You're
waiting for it.
I'm sorry, you're playing hurt today.
I am very hurt.
Yeah. Halford called me last night at 9:30 at night, and he's like, I just woke up.
Yeah.
I'm like,
what?
How? It's 9:30 at what? Am I late for the show? What's going on? I was so confused.
I may have called Jason to ask what 9:30 it was. Was it 9:30 the night one or the morning one? And if so, did I sleep through the show?
And the funniest thing, I was like, I was in bed by then.
Yeah.
I was asleep.
Two ships.
And I was like, well, okay, try and do some prep for tomorrow's show because I think some people might be listening.
And I sure did. He is a presentation of, wait for it, White Rock Hyundai. Kevin Woodley joins us now on the Halford and Breath Show on Sportsnet 650. Kev, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, so I'll deliver the news. What perfect timing. The NHL has just announced its three finalists for the Vezina Trophy, awarded to the goaltender adjudged to be the best at his position. The three finalists this year are Sergei Bobrovsky of the Florida Panthers, Connor Hellebuck of the Winnipeg Jets, and Thatcher Demko of your Vancouver Canucks, everybody. The injured goalie is a Vezina finalist. So with Kev, we go to Kev now. Kev, welcome to the show. There's your news for the morning.
Yeah, I knew it was being announced today. I didn't know at what time, and I didn't know who the third finalist was. But anytime you got a guy who's 17th in the league in goals saved above expected and 24th in adjusted save percentage, you got to make him a third Vezina finalist. So congratulations to Sergei Bobrovsky. My God.
Shade hath been thrown.
Wins, there baby, wins.
That's what the GMs vote for. It's all about the wins. Maybe a little raw save percentage. Never mind the fact his is one of the highest expected in the entire league. But hey, no question, we saw the save in round one. We saw what he did in the playoffs last year. He's an incredible goaltender, and this is sort of the resume that GMs tend to prefer. In terms of who actually had the best seasons, Hellebuck fully deserving to be up there. Ironically, despite having a playoff that is the polar opposite of Sergei Bobrovsky, Thatcher Demko was third in goals saved above expected, Connor Hellebuck was second, and Jordan Binnington actually finished first in the National Hockey League in goals saved above expected. I won't run down the list of the other 16 guys who were better than Sergei Bobrovsky on a per-shot basis this year, but hey, it is what it is. It's not a criticism of Bobrovsky, it's just that, even the guy we're watching in Nashville right now, UC Saros, him not being a finalist last year was absurd. Absurd when you dug into the numbers. But, hey, GM's going to GM.
Hellebuck's winning this thing anyway, though, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, maybe votes were cast after the first round. You might get a different result. But, yeah, and deservedly so. Like I said, he may have finished second in goals saved above expected. But some of the metrics in close games were just, insane. Most of his work was done tied or up a goal. Never had the margins. A victory, sort of that margin of error that even Thatcher Demko had during his first half when the Canucks were scoring all those goals. Tough break for Demko was the timing of the injury, because when we remember those three games he had leading in, he was starting, he looked like a guy who was right back on top of his game. And if you look at how Hellebuck faded down the stretch, there was absolutely an opportunity for this to be Thatcher Demko's year, but is what it is. He'll finish second.
Okay, let's go right to the... I did want to ask about Hellebuck, but we got to get to the Canucks story is so... it's unbelievable. And the fact that this isn't, somehow caused an implosion and that they're up 3-1, having used three goalies through four games, is remarkable. Testament to a lot of different things. But I want to ask you what you thought of Seelov's performance yesterday, because we played the audio from Rick Tocchet, and all due respect to Rick, but it probably wasn't his major focus. His takeaway was he looked calm in there. So I was like, okay, let's get something a little deeper. Let's ask Kev.
Did he look big in there?
Did he look big? That's a big question. Mm-hmm. Kev,
he moved well. He moved very well.
Seemed to move well.
Kev, feel free to fill in the gaps here. How did Arturs Seelovs look to you yesterday?
He looked calm in there.
Big.
Honestly, though, like that's
like
one
Magoli's.
Of the
big and calm.
That's one of the things that's kind of been missing this year. A little overactivity, chasing play, too aggressive. We saw it at times. I thought even during his 4-game run at the end of the regular season, like to me, the best thing you can say, like I mean this in the positive way, is like that to me that was his best performance of the five he's played this year. And it came on the road with the pressure that was attached to it. I thought that was easily his best game. He looked in control of his game. A little positionally aggressive that leads to the gap between him and the post that the puck gets through and off of Forsberg's skate for the third goal. But that's just how he's playing things, especially off the rush. Like he's going to take ice and trust that the guys aren't going to let pucks get through to the back door. And, is it exploitable with passes? Maybe less so compared to other goaltenders because he is pretty quick. But he's managing those decisions in terms of when to take ice and when to maybe back off a little bit really well. When pucks went behind the net, he was in control in his post play, going side to side and sort of into his reverse track, one side to the other and back. And that's, there were times and there were goals that resulted in it, where that was way more frantic, and even in the regular season when he was up here. And there were times in the American League where, forget frantic, it just looked completely out of control. So, calm is actually a fair description. It was the most in control I've seen him up here, and given the stakes, that's saying something. We can look at the technical game, we can look at the tactical game, we can evaluate how they're managing both of those, but you rarely get a glimpse in between the ears. We can see what happens between the pipes, but not between the ears. And I thought last night was a real glimpse into, the way this kid's put together mentally and one of the strengths of why they think he's got NHL upside long term.
So you're making the call. You're Rick Tocchet. Game 5. Let's say Casey DeSmith is 100%. He's ready to go. There's nothing that should make you feel worried that he's going to suffer a worse injury if he plays. He's 100%. You've got a decision between him and Seelovs. Who do you go with?
I'd probably still go back to Casey. And that's no disrespect. It's just that, because Artur showed you he could handle it. But, I could make an argument, not that you don't in any way blame the first goal on Artur's, but, Casey doesn't have the... It's a floor-ceiling thing, right? Like, he's got a higher floor, and Artur's probably has a higher ceiling. And there were some elements even in the goals where, is Casey in those situations taking away the perimeters of the net? Maybe not as well. But are pucks going through him? Probably not. Casey played really well in Nashville in Game 3, and so, if healthy, if 100%, if we're at the point where there's no risk of re-injury, which obviously is an issue right now given the status of your number one goaltender, my hunch is they would go back to Casey DeSmith.
What did you think about the Canucks as a whole? I guess what's on your mind heading into Game 5? Like, because you can go with two options here. Either you can be super optimistic that the Canucks have found a way to get a 3-1 series lead and we still haven't seen really their best. Or you can say that, if the Preds go in to Game 5 and win at Rogers Arena, then all of a sudden all the Canucks fans in Vancouver might be like, oh boy, this thing could still go pear-shaped.
Yeah, I think you look at, it's a bit of both, right? Like you have to look at a bit of both. And this is the thing about this team. They'll evaluate it honestly. Not just talk it, but I think the players will be honest with themselves. Last night, Preds had 10 high-danger chances. Vancouver ended up with 6. They were all towards the end, right? Like outside of the first goal on the first shot, and then the extra net goals in the overtime goal, like that's all of them, right? Now, they converted 4-6, so that's great. But when you go through the rest of, like, first shot to final 3 minutes with 2 high-danger chances, like, again, not good. Overall on the series, though, like last night was the first night where the Preds sort of got theirs and created a lot of chances. On the series, it's actually quite even. Like it's almost like there's nothing happening out there. Like the Preds have 10 expected goals and the Canucks have 9 for the series, 4 games in. And so their ability to sort of handle the Predators through the neutral zone last night was a bit worrisome. Their inability to get to the front of the net or generate anything offensively themselves was a bit worrisome. Like, these are all, you know, things that I'm sure they're trying to and talking about addressing. And your fear is, because of the way the last two went, because it was sort of a lot of Casey DeSmith in game three and just like one of the craziest comebacks anyone's ever seen in game four, the margins aren't there, right? Yeah, you're up 3-1 in the series, but it could tilt the other way pretty quick. And at the end of the day, you just don't want to go back to Nashville. I'm sure the media, well, maybe not. It's a long flight.
That's a long flight. Yes.
The fans, including a friend of mine who was there for game three and four and found himself on the television quite prominently in that package leading up to overtime, they might want to go back. But if you're the Vancouver Canucks and you have designs on getting guys rested and healthy and ready for a round two, probably almost certainly against the Edmonton Oilers, you do not want to go back to Nashville. So you've got to figure a few of these things out. There's positives, though, right? The power play's clicking, what they did with the extra man, the set face-off play. Like, there's positives there, but it doesn't go through the lineup enough that you can feel great about on balance about how the last two games have gone.
We're speaking to Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine here on the Halford & Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Kev is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. Kev, if you're UC Soros right now, are you happy with the way that you've played in this series? Are you disappointed? Or have you just not had enough action because the Canucks have only put 71 shots on you through four games?
Well, I mean, listen, like we've talked about this before. Don't discount how tough it is. Like, in some ways, last night was probably better for Arturs because he was busier. Like, one of the challenges he had in those four games he played down the stretch of the regular season is there were some really low shot nights. Right, like at least the Preds kept him engaged in that game. There's no chance for your mind to sort of wander to bigger picture things and, you know, start looking ahead to the future and stuff like that. And there's probably a little bit the other way. Like, not a lot of shots is not easy for goalies. But if I'm UC Saros and I've given up on 11 and on expected 9, and I'm scrambling as much as I am in my crease and find myself diving head first at as many pucks as he did, you know, last night. And hey, some of those for sure, the best are. First one on the opener, that's just a hell of a play, and sometimes you have to tip your hat, but certainly there's been a lot of activity in his crease where, you know, the goalie we know for sort of holding edges and pushing across and staying over his knees has ended up on his belly reaching sticks and diving, and, you know, I don't know that that's necessary. Like I don't think that UC Saros himself would describe that as his best game or what he looks like when he's on top of his game, and there's been a lot of that in this series.
I guess the Oilers must be feeling pretty good about Stuart Skinner right now.
They should be. They should be. If I'm the Kings, I might be feeling. We talk about the adjusted numbers, and David Riddick had the fifth highest adjusted save percentage in the league this year. And I know he didn't play much, and I know nobody sees him as a number one, but I thought we might have seen him sooner in that series. Now, I know it didn't do them any good. Because they couldn't score at the other end. They were, you talk about teams being content with outside shots and little quality, that was the Kings last night. But, you know, if they made that move early in the series, maybe they're not giving up 18 and not, or, you know, over the first three games. Listen, this is, like, Skinner's perfectly capable of this if you don't allow it to turn into a track meet. His one weakness, and it was why he was near the bottom of the league when they were dead last in the league themselves at giving up rush chances. And even after the coaching change, when they cleaned up all the rush chances against, his numbers were still underwater on the ones they did give up. So it's all about, for the Edmonton Oilers, if they want the best of Stuart Skinner and they want to give him a chance to be as good as he was last night, just don't give up rush chances. And I mean, to a certain degree, you're always going to give up a little, but they started trading them a little bit in that series. Maybe because they thought it was going to be too easy after game one, and maybe in a lot of ways it has been too easy. Like, they kind of feel like they can just put their foot on the gas at any point. But if you're going to get into a track meet, that's not the goal. Like, it sounds like a slight, and I'm worried about that, and it's not, because it's not intended. It's just, it's playing away from his biggest strengths and towards his biggest weakness. And there were times I was shocked to see it, frankly, in the first few games against the Kings where they got into that style of game, because they should know better by now. Frankly, some of their performances at the beginning of that series, the word I would use, because it's a word Quinn Hughes has used in the opposite direction for the Canucks, it was immature. They had some immature performances where they just didn't bother to defend and gave up the kind of chances that, you know, make their goaltender look bad. And last night they didn't, and guess what? He looked fine.
Hey, Kev, remember a couple of years ago when everyone was joking that the Edmonton Oilers broke Jacob Markstrom?
Yes, sir.
Have the Colorado Avalanche done the same to Connor Hellebuck?
Well, I would say, I mean, it's not limited to Hellebuck, right? Like, it's the whole team. They're just like hot knife through butter, even in game one, the type of chances they're creating in that series. That said, I don't know if it's the Colorado Avalanche or just the Stanley Cup playoffs, right? Like, Connor Hellebuck is the best goalie in the national, in the world, in straight lines. Now, listen, like, last night's game was 12 high-danger chances for Colorado and 4 for Winnipeg. The expected goals were 5-1, like, or 5-2. They're just pulling them apart defensively.
Yeah.
Laterals, high danger everywhere. So this isn't all on Connor Hellebuck. As a matter of fact, as I scroll through it, they have been double-digit high-danger chances for against Winnipeg in every single game. It's like the opposite of what's happening in Vancouver and Nashville.
It feels like Colorado spent that entire series on the power play.
There's a lot of things that have gone wrong for Winnipeg. But when you've got the guy that won the Vezina Trophy, everybody expects him to bail you out. And there's two parts to this. One, it shows you, and this is why what the Canucks have embraced structure-wise is paying off no matter who's in goal, because it doesn't matter who's in goal if you're not going to defend, and if you can't defend, and if elite players are able to generate the types of chances they've had, whether it's on the power play, whether it's on the rush. So, like, you got to sort of back up a little bit and not put this all on Connor Hellebuck. And yet the expectations of Connor Hellebuck, and this is where when I say, and I get skewered for this anytime I've said it, I don't know that he would be the slam dunk best on best for the United States the next time we play whatever it is, Olympics or whatever the hell they're calling these next tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
Because it depends how the Americans are going to play. If they want, with all their offensive talent, to play fire wagon back and forth hockey, I'm going with somebody else. In straight lines, there is nobody better. Once you go east-west and start to create slot line plays, it's not that he's bad. He's just average. Like, the stats are really close to average. And when you think about how good he is at everything else, average relative to all his other numbers, that's what you're going to attack. And we've had multiple playoffs now where teams, and listen, the Jets do a fantastic job in the regular season of insulating from those specific types of chances. They have not even come close to being able to do it in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And so his, again, it's a relative weakness. It's not necessarily even a weakness, but relative to everything else he does well, teams are just attacking it and picking it apart.
Any thoughts on the Leafs-Bruins series, just on the goaltending matchup in general, either the Bruins' decision to go back to Swayman for Game 4 instead of continuing to alternate, or maybe something on the Toronto side, perhaps about the future of the Leafs in goal? Samsonov is a pending UFA. There's going to be big changes in Toronto, especially if they go out to Boston. Just any thoughts on that series in general?
Well, I like the approach they had, like, give them the first two games and see who plays the best and then go with that goalie for the series. I don't think that necessarily has to mean that it's going to be Jeremy Swayman the rest of the playoffs. Maybe he gets on a roll and he gets a run with it and we don't see any changes. But I think the fact that they ran into it last year, right? Like, he hasn't played, like, 10 in a row all year, just like Ullmark had never played 10 in a row all year before. And by the way, Linus Ullmark, out of the goalies that have started the series in the playoffs, Jeremy Swayman's number one in adjusted save percentage, and Linus Ullmark is number two from his lone start. So it's not like he was bad. I expect to see both. On the other end, man, that's a longer conversation, because I'm shocked at not just the fact that Joseph Woll didn't see the net earlier in that series, but frankly, I'm shocked by how they handled his starts and minutes after coming back from the high ankle sprain. I know there were struggles. He didn't look like the same guy at times after the high ankle sprain compared to before, where he was trending towards being an early season Vezina candidate before that ankle sprain. When you look at the numbers, like, they just fed him all the absolute crap sandwich starts, and then it was like, oh, well, look, his numbers aren't very good, so we can't play him in the playoffs. Like, you sort of created it, frankly. His expected save percentage post-ankle injury was .870. So no wonder his raw numbers are bad. His adjusted numbers were still better than Ilya Samsonov after the ankle injury down the stretch. And people will look at the raw numbers and they'll be like, that's not possible. Well, guess what? It is. He is a better goaltender flat out. I know he hasn't quite reached the levels that he was at before because of the ankle injury, but I would have found a way to get him in better situations down the stretch so that I was able to go to him a lot sooner than they have in the playoffs. And now it may be too late, but they finally got their better goaltender, their number one goaltender in there. And who knows? If nobody else shows up, it doesn't matter for the Leafs. And there's a lot of hard conversations that have to be had. But I remain as confident now as I was before the ankle injury that the future of goaltending in Toronto is Joseph Woll.
This is a purely hypothetical situation. A lot of things probably wouldn't make sense for it to actually happen. But I'm just throwing it out there because a couple of people have asked into the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket. With Seelovs and DeSmith, if both were healthy, could you theoretically or feasibly go to a rotation between the two, or would that be too difficult because they don't have any experience doing it during the regular season?
No, I mean, like, they both have experience in not playing regularly during the regular season. Even
That's
the
true.
Fact they've never done a back and forth doesn't matter. I think here they both find an element of rhythm to it. I guess where it would become relevant or perhaps necessary is if you've gone on a longer run. You know, we saw Casey as those seven straight starts after Demko gets hurt. We saw sort of some fatigue in his game, frankly.
Yep.
We saw some slippage technically. And so, you know, hey, like if Nashville pushes back here and this becomes a long series and then you're right into the next series and you're still waiting on Demko to recover, then you probably need to go to both of them. And maybe a rotation of sorts would make sense. But until you get to that point, like, you know, if they can finish this off right now, there's going to be plenty of rest. You open at home in the next series. You're probably got next to no travel, assuming it's Edmonton. Like, it's the easiest travel you could have outside of Seattle in the Western Conference. Everything sets up for one guy to be able to sort of go on a roll here. But certainly as the run got longer, those are questions that would be fair to ask.
Kev, this was great, man. Thanks for taking the time to do it. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the week and enjoy tomorrow's Game 5. We'll do this again, not next week, but the week following.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. That's Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Yeah, tonight's going to be some good games. Tampa at Florida and then Dallas at Vegas. But tomorrow looks like an incredible night of hockey viewing because you start with the Leafs and the Bruins, and we'll see if the Leafs can survive or if they go out, you know, in a, I don't know, trash can fire or whatever they call it in Toronto. You've got the Islanders trying to stay alive against the trash can fire.
It's called dumpster fire.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they have trash can fires. The Islanders at the Hurricanes, less interesting. I think the Hurricanes will probably put the Isles out of their misery there. The Avs and Jets, that series has just been kind of like curious to watch. Mm-hmm. You know? I don't know how much of this is the Avs versus, you know, playing really well, or how much of this is the Jets just like losing their structure or whatever. But I mean, the Avs have really dominated the series. And then of course you kick it off with, or you cap it all off with the Preds and the Canucks.
Yeah, no, I mean,
if you just want to watch two games, you can start with Toronto and Boston at 4 o'clock and then just
tomorrow is the Canucks and Preds. Tomorrow is a highly superior hockey night, like, without question.
Yeah, I'm not going to leave my couch for like 7 hours.
Well, you know what, folks?
And how is that different from any night?
Yeah.
Well, there's an extra hour on top of it.
Remember, folks, we are now down a series, too. So there's less hockey to watch, less playoff hockey to watch than ever because the Washington Capitals and their brief flirtation with playoff hockey, that's over now.
Thanks for wasting our time watching in Capitals. I would have much rather have seen Pittsburgh in the playoffs or Detroit in the playoffs. I'm not saying that Pittsburgh or Detroit deserve to be in the playoffs. The Caps found a way to get in there, but you know, they weren't interesting to watch in any way. I think the Penguins would have been interesting to watch the way Sid was playing, certainly compared to Ovechkin, and the way that Detroit was playing. But they didn't make it. Washington did. Now, I don't know what comes next for them. I guess just continuing to wait until Ovi breaks Gretzky's record.
Yeah, kind of.
And the Rangers got a really easy matchup in that first round. They deserved an easier matchup because they won the President's Trophy, and now they're just sitting around waiting for probably Carolina.
Ovi's not going to break any record if he scores at the pace he did in that series.
So, yeah, postscript to that series, 0 points. Zilch. First time in his professional career that he's been scoreless in a playoff series. And for, you know what, a large part of the reason that they were able to rally late and sneak into the playoffs was because Ovechkin turned it on.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up finishing with a reasonable goal total. Actually, I think he broke 30.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And he, but I think what happened was is he and the rest of the team expended so much energy, everything they had in the tank, they used to get into the playoffs, and then they were just toast.
I do wonder if they go to him and say, "I know you're a legend, Ovi, but you know, and I know you're
going
to, I know, no, yeah,
no,
I know you're getting
so
older.
So long, thanks for nothing.
I know you're getting older, but could you please maybe try and show up in a little better shape?"
He finished game four, the closeout game, the elimination game, with 15:26 of ice time, which was his lowest of the.
And his quote after the game was, "Is it over yet? Yeah. Oh my God.
It was hard to breathe with the oxygen mask covering his mouth." Yeah. I think you bring up a good point, though. Like, something is going to have to change where they can't have a replica of this year. Like, some people will say, "Well, what are you talking about? It was a success. He ended up scoring a bunch of goals and they made the playoffs." But it felt like it took everything that they had just to squeak into the weaker of the two conferences. And I would suggest that they're going to want a more balanced performance from everyone next year. Not let's take the first half of the season off and then kick it into overdrive for the second half. Anyway, final half hour of the program coming up. We're going to do what we learns. Hashtag it WWL. Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. Get them in. There's no giveaways today, unfortunately. We're not giving anything away. But you can still be on the radio, which is fun. Here's a new one. Playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Threadco Print Shop. Take your brand to the next level. Check out Threadco Print Shop for screening, printing, and embroidery. For a seamless experience from start to finish, visit threadcoprint.com. Final half hour coming up. You're listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Big Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now for my favorite part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always dead.
It's what we learn time. It's what we learn time. It's what we learn time. On the show.
8:35 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in Hour 3 of the program. It is what we learn time. Hour 3 is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. All right, let's do some what we learns. I'm going to do a basketball one just because I was talking to Basketball Ben. Who works here at Sportsnet 650, occasionally produces our show. He was at the Hollywood Theater with us yesterday.
Good team player, that Ben.
Yeah. He was like, "Can you turn the ball game on?
Yeah.
Basketball game on?"
Probably not going to happen, Basketball Ben. Basketball Ben was there. Jamie Dodd was there. All of you that came out, thank you very much. And actually, shout out to three people in particular. Jay Swing from the Hollywood Theater for making the whole thing happen. The venue was terrific. And AJ and Teresa from AJ's Pizza for supplying pizza for everyone throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you all for making it an awesome event. Anyway, I was talking to Ben, and I said, you know, I feel bad because the NBA playoffs are on, you know, full throttle. There's great storylines, compelling storylines all over the place, and we talk about it for 5 minutes, maybe twice a week, max.
Yeah.
I asked Jason the other week, I'm like, how much NBA playoffs have you watched? He's like, zero. And I'm like, our fault.
Are the Timberwolves good now?
Yeah, they're playing basketball still. Usually they're in the lottery.
Anthony Edwards, the TV star?
Yeah. Wow, he's so versatile. Anyway, I only bring this up because tonight could be the end of the LeBron Lakers era. So they are down 3-1 in their series to the Nuggets. They staved off elimination, but I think everyone understands that they're dead in the water and they're going to lose to Denver at some point here. Here's how it works. LeBron has another year on his contract with the Lakers, but it's an option year. It's $51.4 million, and he is eligible to opt out at the end of the season. Now, there's a lot of talk that He's been in the league for 21 years. He's getting old. If he wants to win another ring, it probably isn't going to be with this group of Lakers. They just don't have it.
Yeah.
They keep running into the Nuggets. That's not good for them. I think everyone sees that the end is nigh for this current group, this crop. So, I mean, Bill Simmons floated the idea of him potentially going to Dallas to team up with Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. There's a lot of people that think he might go to the East, maybe even join, like, the Sixers.
A super team is required to beat the Nuggets, right?
Kinda.
Yeah.
Nuggets are real good. They're real good at basketball. Mm-hmm. And Nikola Jokic, so funny that he can play bully ball with guys that are huge.
Yeah.
Like you're bully balling the biggest guys on the planet. And he does it with regularity. So if you're interested in seeing potentially the last game of the LeBron Lakers era, tonight, 7 o'clock, they look to stave off elimination yet again, and the Nuggets look to take that series 4-1. Moo, cow me. Laddie has a What We Learned with an audio component.
Yes. Well, we talked a little bit about the Rangers-Caps series. It has come to an end. And I
mercifully.
Guess Tom Wilson wasn't willing to go quiet into that night. He was running around a little bit, which caught the ire of the radio broadcast of the Rangers, former NHLer, is it Dan Maloney?
Don Maloney.
Don Maloney?
Or Dan. There's two of them.
There's
anyway,
two of them.
Keep going. Maloney.
Maloney on the broadcast took issue with Wilson.
What is he doing?
He's just grabbing Fox.
What is he doing, the idiot? He grabs a hold of Fox out of the blue. You're an idiot.
Now, if that's
well, he's a tough guy. Tough guy on Panarin 2 years ago. Tough guy on Fox. And they talk about Rimpy.
So I saw this. So we'll play it again. But so what
happened? That is incredible.
What happened was Trocheck scored on the power play to make it 2-1. And then Fox skated over to join the celebration. And then someone thought that he might have said something to Wilson when he was skating by.
Right.
And then Wilson went in there and was like, not on my watch.
You're an idiot.
And now Tom Wilson in the Capitals.
I would have loved to see the play-by-play guy's face while all this was going on.
He's like, oh, God, he's losing it. That was good
after
audio.
The second idiot, you'd be like, okay.
Mookow that because I want to play some audio, too.
Okay.
I learned that Brenda Batchelor has been calling an absolutely great series. And I also learned that the Canucks better not blow this because according to Brendan Batchelor, the Canucks now have a stranglehold on the series.
Zadorov behind the net for Garland in front. Lindholm scores! Elias Lindholm wins it for the Canucks! 1:02 into overtime. He beats UC Soros from the slot, and Vancouver has a stranglehold on this series.
It's a loose strangle.
You can get out of a stranglehold. Like, there's moves you could do. So maybe, like, we just hope the Preds don't know any of those, you know, reversals or anything.
Right,
it's not a numeric or statistical strangle.
Yeah.
But 3-1 is a stat, and they're up. It was, I thought, when we had Adam Bingen on earlier, he had the best insight to the whole thing. Is like, in the post-game coaches' availabilities, Tockett sounded like the guy that was down 3-1 in the series, and Bruno sounded like the guy that was up 3-1 in the series because Brunette really didn't – he was disappointed. But he's like, look, we kind of let up for 3 minutes. Otherwise, 57, he thought they played great. And
you can't pile on as the coach after a loss like that. Like,
no.
If you have any hope of coming back in this series, if you're Nashville, Brunette couldn't have gone off on
no, no, team. No. What, like, and what are you going to say, right? You're going to like, well, I really thought Sisson should have scored. That would have made that easier.
We all saw what
Sisson,
happened.
You there with the open net.
Yeah.
Put it in the net.
Nyquist probably shouldn't have gotten danced around so thoroughly at the blue line. He's still sliding.
I think it made
speak.
A good point. Like, the Canucks haven't even played great, and they're still up 3-1 in the series. So that just shows the disparity between the top and talent, right? I mean, the Canucks, even not playing great, they have those game breakers that the Preds just don't have.
I don't think you can predict anything in this series.
Yeah, like I'm very hesitant.
How would you bet on this series? How would you possibly do it?
I'm very hesitant
to come
to
a conclusion and then bet the opposite way?
Maybe, yeah.
I'm very hesitant to think that Nashville is like mentally, emotionally, and spiritually broken.
I can see them like coming back fired up.
The fourth is the toughest one to win. Fourth game is the toughest one to win, asterisk, unless you're playing the Washington Capitals. Otherwise, it's a tough one to win, right? Yes, Greg?
Correction to my clip that I played. It's not Dan or Don Maloney. It's Dave Maloney.
How many Maloneys are there?
Well, we got close.
D. Maloney.
D. Maloney was the one in the clip.
All right.
Oh, that's too obvious. Let's just call him Dave M.
give us a moo cow, and we got to go to the listeners because there's a lot of good what we learned.
Oh, another correction. Turns out it was Doug Maloney. No.
We got to go into the Dunbar Lumber text line for what we learned. So we've printed off those submissions.
What we learned, as always, brought to you by Get Fire Plan. Protect what matters most with comprehensive fire safety plans, monthly audits, and risk mitigation at $200 off. Visit them at getfireplan.com.
Oh, my God. We're having a fire
plan.
Eric really liked your – it's a loose stranglehold.
It's a loose stranglehold, yeah.
Your hands are around the neck, but you're not trying to kill.
But it's loving, you know. He's being careful.
It's a gentle strangle.
Yeah.
I bet Batch is like, oh, God.
My Batch is coming on tomorrow.
These guys are ruining me. Why are they doing this?
Oh, God. The Bachelor is like going to be the Bachelor jinx. The series was known as the Brendan Bachelor curse.
Could you imagine if that becomes a thing? Oh, it's called a Batch chokehold. It's like where you got him, but but you don't. But you got him.
Game 7
Bachelor. Wriggle away
somehow. I said
the cops would be like, no. It was just a Bachelor chokehold.
Yeah, it was a loose
strangle. They teach it in police school.
I think if you look at the body cam footage, it's clear it was a Bachelor stranglehold.
Yeah, we know what that means.
Gunner from Kelowna. What we learned. I learned that the city of Toronto has fallen on hard times when it comes to sports. Jays, Leafs, and Raptors, all horrible. When being there for a week, sports radio laying it verbally on all teams hard and often. Okay, that's a weird way to put it.
Or is it?
Yeah, okay.
Puff knew what he was doing.
With what we learned, the Oilers game four was basically the Canucks in game three. They won with only 13 shots on net. Skinner played insane. And yet, Evan Bouchard was the first star of the game.
Because he scored a goal.
Yeah, he scored the only goal,
on
the power play, I believe. And then David Rittich was the third star. I didn't stay up for that whole game, but I watched the first part, and the Kings were like laying it on the Oilers physically, possession-wise. That might have been their last gasps, though, in that series, you know?
There is some real consternation coming out of L.A. right now. The general consensus is, well, wait a minute. This is the third time that we've come up against Edmonton.
And Dubois does not seem to be making a difference.
So 2 years ago in 2022, they took Edmonton to 7 games. Hard-fought series. Okay. Last year.
And McDavid almost single-handedly won that series for the Oilers.
Last year, they went to 6, and they're like, that feels like a step backwards. Then they made this huge Pierre-Luc Dubois move to try and get them over the hump, and now they could go out in 5. They're going backwards. I mean, I know it's, you know, this is going to be their, this group. This is going to be their thing. This is going to be their dragon to slay.
Well, they're running out of time with Doughty and Kopitar.
This is taking a step backwards.
Doughty's still the D-man that plays the most on that team.
Yeah, and he got
Kopitar's right. Still a massive part of that team. They ain't getting any younger.
No, I know. And so I do wonder what the future has in store. Remember, they fired Todd McClellan to save the season this year, and Jim Miller came in and kind of just implemented this really boring defensive style to get them into the playoffs.
Yeah, Jim Miller was like, keep doing what you're doing, guys.
Yeah, pick a fence. Let's go.
Mike in Maple Ridge, what we learned, Hockey Night in Canada shouted out the Halbro show twice and showed the watch party. I was proud to hear my favorite show recognized on the big stage. The coolest part of that was watching the watch party watch itself on TV.
Yeah.
Because a bunch of them had...
Watch party inception.
A bunch of people are like, well, it looks like our watch party.
Hey, it's us.
Yeah. It was a fun night, and we certainly thank David Amber for requesting that video and putting it out on the broadcast.
You were Johnny on the spot with the overtime goal.
I recorded all the videos.
Yeah. Which is great.
My iPhone was just barely running.
Well, because we were talking about how to get something in their hands video wise, but also make it organic. Like instead of me going up there with a microphone, it's like, can everyone pretend like the Canucks just scored 3-2-1? Like that doesn't work,
right?
But it's very hard to, unless you're videoing an entire game, it's hard to be ready for the spontaneity of a goal celebration.
The coolest
part
of the Hollywood theater is that they've taken out the old movie theater seats in the middle part. So when the Canucks scored to tie it and when the Canucks scored in overtime, essentially the Hollywood Theater became a mosh pit.
Yeah, it was great. There was a good little anecdote there when a lot of people showed up and didn't read the fine print where we said there was only limited seats. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, they're like, we're going to be standing for 3.5 hours.
They or just, sitting nicely cross-legged on the floor. It was like looking down on a kindergarten class watching the game.
Shout out to the guy that did read the fine print and brought his own camping chair to a movie theater.
That guy was smart.
I respected that guy.
Duncan the Chef, who I met yesterday. Nice to meet you, Duncan. What we learned, I am more sore from the Hollywood viewing party yesterday than my men's league playoffs.
Duncan was standing.
It got physical in there. There were some hits.
Duncan also brought us gift cards to a particular establishment.
Quinn Hughes, the Boston Pizza.
Quinn Hughes wasn't the only one taking a beating.
We mocked ruthlessly on the air. He liked it. I got one here. No, we already just read that one. I'm sorry.
All right. J&OK Falls with an Ask Us Anything.
I didn't want to read it again. We'd already read
it. You're not good at this. J&OK Falls with an Ask Us Anything. Did the Canucks flight home yesterday look like A, a scene from the LIV golf plane, or B, the in-flight scene in The Wolf of Wall Street?
So what was going on with the LIV thing? Because I saw this. I saw it making the rounds, but I didn't watch the video.
Oh, I mean, that's old, isn't it? Like the.
But there was a new one that came out recently. It's something to do with Cam Smith.
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hopefully not like the Wolf of Wall Street one.
Yeah, like everyone. Which weren't there a couple flight scenes on that? Like there was one
that was their
flight to Vegas as a brokerage.
Yeah.
And then the other one was when they were going to Switzerland. I hope they weren't all doing quaaludes. Those are hard to find.
From that, Gary, of what we learned, please tell me we didn't read this one. Canucks and Edmonton win games with record low of 12 and 13 shots, respectively. Talent still counts. However, to win more deservedly, will the Canucks need to play a boring, stifling game despite having talent like LA does? No, the Canucks need to get more shots on net. They can't keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have the NHL record for fewest shots through the first four games and then expect to do that in game five and win again. Like they need.
Let's worry about the Oilers if and when the Canucks get to the Oilers.
The Oilers, I'm not.
They're not done yet. They are not. This series is not over, folks.
The Oilers, that game last night was almost an anomaly because all the other games in that series have been very high scoring, high events. So just that. But here's the thing. We talked about this after game two. And the response from Tocchet to getting more shots through was, and we kind of went back and forth when arguing, but it was like, well, our will needs to be better than their will, and we need to find, you know what I mean? It was more like, we just need to work harder and try harder. I do wonder now, this is four games of ridiculously low shot totals, if there needs to be a philosophical change or a tactical shift. That it can't just be about.
I've tried to make the guys work harder. They keep winning though.
Yeah,
like, it's a real problem.
At a certain, coach,
we don't have to.
That's what I'm saying. At a certain point, you have to be like, okay, maybe what we're doing strategically isn't working.
This is a good text then. Woodrow, the eligible bachelor, texts in with what we learned after watching game four. I learned that the Canucks are like that kid who has all weekend to finish a school project, but does everything on Sunday night in 5 minutes and gets an A+.
Right. They want to know how you got the grade. They just want to know what the grade is, right? Like, yeah, there was an element of panic and desperation and all that stuff, and it worked out great. And it was, again, very weird because that's an all-time franchise moment there, what happened last
night. Sounds like every assignment I turned in high school.
Right?
There was panic, there was fear, but it got done.
But, like, last night isn't sliding it in, like Homer delivering his taxes, like throwing it from afar.
Yeah. bouncing off the rim.
Speaking of, you got to get your taxes done. That's just a reminder to everyone.
But here's the thing. That game last night, like when we go back years later, that's going to be an iconic finish in franchise history.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it because it was so rare. And it probably isn't going to happen. I mean, God, it could happen again, but likelihood is very slim.
Latest in franchise history, they've come back, right?
There's been three times in franchise history they've scored an equalizing goal in the third period to force overtime inside of 10 seconds.
Okay, I want to read a few more here. Yeah. Sam at the Warehorse. Oh, Warehorse. Warehouse. Yeah. It's because you yeah. What we learned, Warehorse.
Warehorse.
Like a werewolf?
He's got a horse on the mind.
A horse?
The show is turning into a real trash can fire.
Yeah. In the afternoon, he's Jason Bruff, but when the moon hits, be aware.
<He's a> Warehorse. God, it's a full moon.
The most unintimidating monster of all time.
What's he doing?
Watch out, he might kick you.
Oh, dear Lord, what is that?
Don't stand behind him. That's the only way he's ever going to get you. He'll kick you.
Look out. He's morphing.
He loves apples.
Someone brought him out. He's fine.
Well, what we learned from Sam at the Warehorse, All three of our goalies are better than Connor Hellebuyck. I loved the text that came in from JD the Jerk where he said, if the Canucks don't start Tolopilo for game four, they are absolute cowards.
Yeah. You got to do it.
Can you imagine that? That would be the flex. We're like, we don't even get shots on goal. We play any goalie.
Yeah, we're still going to beat you.
Nashville is like, I was like, that is the worst beating we have ever taken.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Yeah, this is incredibly insulting.
And we're not, you know, and you know what? We're putting an e-bug for a backup. Like, we're going to roll all the dice here.
Loves, we'll have a night yourself.
Yeah. Take a night off. Go put an ice bag on your head. We're good.
Surrey Ryan, what we learned, they may have to duct tape Quinn Hughes' body back together red-green style if we do advance to round two. The amount of punishment that Quinn Hughes has taken in this series in just four games, cumulatively, that's a tough one for me.
Tough one.
So I really took a chance saying that. Like, he hasn't taken this many hits in all the games in the regular season he took, right? Like, all of them combined.
This is a lot.
Yeah, and you know, he's still got that terrific escapability, which he showed on the tying goal where he made an unbelievable play. That puck was bouncing too. So not only did he have to corral it and keep the puck in, he had to get past Nyquist, who really did not make a good play on that. Like, he was, that's like diving in on the play. And I know what he was trying to do, but what he ended up doing was spinning himself into the ice. So Hughes beats him on the side and then gets it back to Pettersson, and they all reset and they end up, you know, passing it around and scoring a goal for Brock Besser's hat trick. But the amount of punishment that Quinn Hughes has been taking also makes it very important that the Canucks show some killer instinct and get it done in game five.
Yeah, that's a good point. Everyone can use
of
a lot
course
of
it's a
right
good
now.
Point yeah. I made it. The Canucks need to take care of business tomorrow. I can't wait for the show tomorrow. I can't wait for all the games to keep happening, because each one is just absolutely crazy, improbable, and I don't know what else they have in store for us, but we'll be watching and we'll be talking about it.
All Canucks coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by All Seasons Roofing. Sun, rain, wind, or snow, All Seasons Roofing has you covered with end-to-end roofing services. For your free quote, visit allseasonsroofing.ca. We gotta go, but we will be back tomorrow. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford, he's been Jason Brough, he's been A-Dog, he's been Laddie, he's been intern Zach. This has been the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.